K Talk YA now presents The Cruel Prince, Part 2, from the Folk of the Air trilogy by Holly Black.
To MNK Talk YA.
I'm Marissa Snyder.
And I'm Kitty Bradford.
And this is our young adult fiction podcast. And this week we finished the first book in the Folk of the Air trilogy by Holly Black. This book was called The Cruel Prince. And this was the first series we started in season 4.
I know, and it's 2020. It's like crazy that we're already a whole book in. I forget who I was talking to. I think maybe it was one of our fans, Steph. And she was like, have you guys already started this season? I'm like, yep, we're finishing up the first book. We're posting the first episode. She's like, wow.
Yeah, we don't mess around. We get right in it.
Go, go, go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But this is a good one to start with, I think.
I know.
I'm really enjoying it so far.
Are you? Okay, good. Mm-hmm. I loved this book. I just thought it was so twisty and turny, and there were so many surprises at the end. And I think it, like, leaves off at a great place where I'm really excited to see what happens next.
Yeah, it does. I'm really curious to see how the second book goes, and because sometimes I feel like that's the book that struggles if it's an in-between book. But this one did a really good job of, I mean, it couldn't fully be a standalone, but it does feel like this story concluded, even though, but the stage is set really well for what's to come.
Totally.
I don't know if that makes sense.
Yes.
But. So wait, I have some questions for you.
Okay.
Do you first,
want to talk about where we left off in the book?
Or? It's not even related to that.
Oh, okay.
Just about the fact that this is our first book, basically.
Oh, okay.
And I know you've read it before.
Yes.
But how long ago did you read it? And you didn't read any of the other books before, right? So now we're caught up to where you were?
Yes. Well, I think I have on my Goodreads that I read the second one, but I don't remember it at all.
Okay. And so it's been a while.
I've definitely read them, like, at least a year ago.
Okay.
Because I went to add it on my Goodreads and it was like, you marked this as read. And I was like, what? But I honestly don't remember anything that happened in the second book at all. And I have a terrible memory. So all the surprises that I remember have already happened.
Have been revealed. Okay.
Exactly. That's good. Yeah.
So you can make predictions with me this time.
Yes.
Perfect. Okay. Sorry. Yes. We can jump into where we left off last time. I don't even remember where the half was anymore.
So we left off where Jude stabs Valerian, and then mm-hmm. Dane is really mad, and he comes in, and she thinks that he's mad about stealing the servant girl,
he's
really mad because she stabbed Valerian. And he, like, does that thing where he proves that he has total control over her by making her stab her own hand. But then he, like, backs off and before she actually does it, just to, like, show her, like, oh, I can control you. Mm-hmm. And then she goes ahead and stabs her hand anyway.
Which I had so many feelings about that scene. Again, you just get to this point where there's, like, so much brutality. And mm-hmm. I, like, couldn't tell if it was better or worse or if she should have stabbed it or not or what he thought about the whole thing. And I'm kind of sad that, well, I'm going to spoil something in the second half of the book too, but now that Dane is dead, I kind of enjoyed him as a, like, complicated, is he an ally, is he an enemy kind of character.
Yeah, I know. And along with the whole brutality thing, like, you can really see how Jude is changing a lot. And that scene too, when she stabs herself, I was like, oh my gosh, you're so stubborn. But then I keep coming back to the whole thing where she keeps saying, I don't want to be someone who's afraid. I want to be someone who's feared. And you can totally see how, like, that motto has, like, almost become her mantra. And she's just, like, really living by that.
Okay. So wait, speaking of that. So today when I was updating my Goodreads, it, like, was like, do you want to take the young adult book quote quiz? And I said, sure. Have you done this yet?
No. Can we do it together right now?
Well, I've done it already, but one of them was a quote from this book. But I can give them to you. Do you want to do them?
Yes.
Okay. So the first one is, it tells you the book and it gives you a quote with a blank in it and you have to fill in the blank.
Okay.
And there's 4 choices. So I can give you the choices if you want, or if you just know it, that's fine too. So the first one is from The Maze Runner.
Okay. I've read it.
If you ain't scared, you ain't blank.
If you ain't scared, you ain't smart.
No. Do you want the four choices?
Yeah.
Human, alive, sane, or natural?
Sane.
Human is the answer.
Oh, goddamn. Okay. All right, next one.
The next one is from a book that we've done on the podcast, Caraval by Stephanie Garber.
Oh, no, I better get this right.
Every good story needs a blank, but the best blank are the ones you secretly like.
Every story needs a villain.
Yes, but the best villains are the ones you secretly like. Yep.
The next one,
Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone by J.K. Rowling.
I got this.
It does not do to dwell on blank and forget to live.
Dreams, duh.
Yep. This is the next one's the only one I missed, but I have not read this book. It's from Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children by Ransom Riggs. Have you read that one?
I have read that, yeah.
Okay. We cling to our blank until the price for believing in them becomes too high.
Hopes?
Nope.
Dreams?
Do you want the choices?
Yeah.
Fairy tales, dreams, memories, family.
Fairy tales.
That is correct.
Ooh.
Okay. I don't know if you've read all these. The Hate You Give by Angie Thomas. Have you read that one?
No.
Okay, I'll skip that one. How about The Hazelwood by Melissa Albert?
No.
How about Fellowship of the Ring, J.R.R. Tolkien?
I did read that.
Okay, blank is he that says farewell when the road darkens.
Weak or cowardly or...
You want their choices?
Foolish. Yeah. I'm just going to start saying
wrong. Stupid. Faithless. Wise.
Faithless.
Yes, that's correct. Next one is Hunger Games. I know you read this one.
Oh, yeah.
You don't forget the blank of the person who was your last hope.
Faith.
Correct.
Ooh.
Fault in Our Stars by John Green. Have you read that one?
Yes. Yes, I've read that one.
The marks humans leave are too often blank.
Scars.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the last question was from The Cruel Prince by Holly Black.
Oh, let's see if I get it right.
If I cannot be better than them, I will become so much blank.
Worse?
Correct.
Some of these are just like common sense.
Yeah, I think in some ways having the choices actually makes it harder because you start to be like, ooh, that actually sounds kind of good. Oh, that kind of sounds good, you know, but...
Oh, that was a fun
game. I mean, it wasn't like an impossible quiz, but it was still fun. And I love that it ended with the book we just read. So I thought I'd share. I've never done a quiz on Goodreads before. That was my first one.
Me either. I didn't do too badly.
No, you did great.
Self-respecting YA lover.
As someone who can't remember that they even read the second book in the series, I'm actually very impressed with all of those quotes you managed to put together.
My memory is like a goldfish. Okay, so... What are some other things we loved about the second half of this book?
Well, everything, just again.
Just everything.
Just all of it. I think you maybe mentioned just like wanting some intrigue and some like power plays, and we definitely got that. And again, I like that the pacing was so good. Things kept happening, but it wasn't too fast or too slow. We got some good conclusion, but we also set the stage well for the next book. So I kind of was expecting more of a long play for who was going to get the crown and some of that stuff. So I loved that everything was like within a day or two. And I also loved how she was like trying to manage all these different timelines. Like she promised that she'd like meet the spies again the next day. She promised her sister that she needed just one day, like all the stuff. And she's like, okay, I have to like make these decisions and move. And I like I like that aspect of it, that she was acknowledging how quick it was, but also that she liked that it was moving. Cause I feel like sometimes we're in these stories where either things drag on for a long time and it makes sense cause you have to put a plan in place, or they happen so fast and it's like, how did they even think that through? So I like that it was sort of this one day. She was like talking to all these people and kind of running around and trying to get things in place and
kills Valerian in her spare time.
Yeah. That's also true. Yeah.
Drags him under her bed.
But then the thing I was most disappointed about, and we talked about this last time, I was expecting her sister and her sister's secret to be actually something good, and I'm just more disappointed in her sister than I was expecting to be.
Right, because we learned that her sister, Taryn, her secret lover is Locke, who has been seducing Jude the whole time.
Yep.
And we learned, furthermore, that Locke set up the whole bullying situation and basically told Taryn, I'm going to seduce your sister and you're going to watch, and this is going to be a test of how much you love me to see if you can keep out of it.
And, like, to some extent, I get, like, okay, yes, I love you, I'll prove it, whatever. But then when he actually does it and she still wants to marry him and her dad's like, this guy's not worth it and stuff, and she still, like, picks him over her sister, that's when I was like, okay, girl.
Get it together. Like, you don't... Yeah. You don't...
Go find a pirate prince.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't need to be with a man who is making you prove your love to him by betraying your family. Yeah.
But I kind of love Locke as a bad guy. Or, like, as a... Like, I love how he... I mean, he's totally honest about who he is. He's this fairy who doesn't, like, feel emotions the same way. And he talks about how this idea of, I'm interested in a story and I just, like, want to create drama and, you know, like...
He's like, if there isn't a story, I make one.
Yeah, and it's, like, terrible, but it also is kind of fascinating. And I even love these little moments where, like... Jude is realizing that Locke's kind of, like, intrigued by her because she's starting to become such a strong character herself and, like, making the plot happen, if you will. And so I do, as a story lover, kind of, it's sort of like my, if I was, like, totally evil, what I would want to be like in some way. Like, if I chose an evil path, I would want to just, like, manipulate people for drama.
Yes, I would say so. Rather than Valerian, who just likes to see people hurt. Like, he just likes pain, which is just sadistic.
Yeah. But it was also interesting because we really got to know a little bit more about that whole gang almost, because we also have seen, the other thing we were predicting was that Cardin didn't hate Jude as much as he acted like he hated Jude.
Right.
And it's still really complicated.
He can't stop thinking about her and...
hates himself for it.
Yeah, and he basically confesses that the reason he dislikes her is because... she has a father who loves her despite everything. And, you know, Oak loves her unconditionally. And so just like his jealousy is what's making him act out.
As an outsider looking in, yeah.
But also he's obsessed with her.
Well, and it's so interesting. Again, I love complicated bad guys or just like people with a lot of dimension. Mm-hmm. And I love that, yeah, he is the prince and he has all this stuff going for him. And she's like hated him and viewed him the certain way. And we find out that like his life really wasn't that great. And to your point, he is jealous of these things. And then also I have kind of mixed feelings about him like hating himself for being attracted to her. But I also think it's sort of a really interesting dynamic that we haven't seen in a lot of books before. Like it's not an overplayed thing where like... it's like, oh, you're human. Like, that's disgusting, but also kiss me.
Right. And I mean, you know, I love the enemies to friends trope. But like you said, I don't think we've seen that very often in the books that we've read. I can't really think of many other examples. So it is like fun to kind of explore that in this book.
Yeah. And at a whole different level, I feel like, than... or I don't know, just something about it feels very unique.
Yeah, because it's not just like enemies. It's like hatred and disgust and jealousy and envy and like all these really complicated emotions. It's great.
And it starts with the attract. Like I feel like sometimes from the enemies to friends, it's like, oh, I'm not interested at all. And then like as I get to know them, I'm like become more interested. This one, it's like I'm really interested, but I hate that I'm interested.
So the other thing that we learned that is kind of big is we learned... a lot about Oriana and Liriope, Glock's mother, and Little Oak.
Yes. I can't remember if it was what I predicted on the thing or like after I read one more chapter, I started texting you about some predictions and I was like starting to put pieces together, but not quite. But yeah, I did not expect Oak to be the child cut out of his dead mother's stomach. That was like a little bit extreme for what I thought. I thought maybe she also became pregnant, but because the other lady died or was killed, she like kept it secret and married fast. But this was like even more fairy land.
Way more intense. So Liriope was Dane's lover, but she was also consort of the king. And when he found out she was pregnant, he tried to kill her because there was...
a prophecy.
Not only would his father maybe be pissed off, but there was a prophecy that said, if the child's ever born, you will never be king. And the one thing I really liked about this was I liked that it made Oriana more of a deep character. You know, because before she was always just kind of this, like, pretty, flighty, petty fairy. But now you kind of get a little bit more to her personality and her backstory, where, like, she loved Liriope. I don't even know if I'm saying that right. Mm-hmm. Liriope very deeply, and she was her really good friend. And she has this brutal moment where she finds her friend dying and cuts her baby out of her and saves this child. And that's just something I could never have expected her to do. And Jude has that same moment where she's like, I would have never thought her capable of something like that.
And it even puts some of the other stuff in context, again, with how she treated the girls in relation to Oak, like knowing his big secret. And
she's so protective.
Yeah. You know, I agree. We definitely got a lot more layers to people in this second half of the book. And this is also where we learned a little bit more about Jude and Taryn's parents, right? That was in the first half.
Because Maddox gives Jude the sword that was forged by her father. And we learned that her father actually spent time in Fairyland. So that was unexpected as well.
And I still have so many questions about why they decided to run away or like, Maddox, again, is... We also have a complicated relationship with him because he's, like, the only father figure we know. And in some ways, he is being loyal and protective of his family, but then he's also bloodthirsty and power hungry, and obviously his love can turn violent and some of this other stuff. So it's just, I'm loving how everyone's getting another dimension, sort of, mm-hmm. and it feels very... Again, the pacing, I think, is what I'm most impressed about with this book. I haven't felt like things are slow or too fast. I feel like I'm able to keep up, even though I didn't know the rules of fairy world before. And I don't know. I'm really enjoying it.
I'm super curious to see how Jude's relationship with her father is going to change now. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, gosh, let's talk about that bloodbath that happened at the coronation.
Everyone's dead.
No. Oh my god, everyone died in like the space of 5 minutes. And it's complicated now because Jude was serving Dane and she thought her father was too, but then her father turns on him and decided to back Belican. And he stabs him. Like, Maddox just stabs Dane.
Yep.
And then that sets off a whole turn of events where Belkin stabs Elwyn, and then Kaelia offers to crown Belkin, and then Ghost shoots her, and then poor Rhea slits her own throat because she doesn't want to crown her brother.
Like, I did love that they all kind of, it was really fast in that one sense, but I love, like, one killed themselves, one gave in and was shot, one, like, I love that they all, even though there were a lot of death in a really short amount of time, and we didn't really know most of the royal family that well, but it still, I loved how they each kind of had their own way of dealing with it, and I also loved how the other leaders in the fairy world reacted, like, how, like, they lost respect for him, even though he was kind of the High King still, because... He couldn't get anyone in his family to put the crown on his head, and like...
He looked like such an idiot.
Yeah, he really did.
He was like, oh, I'm going to be the king now. And then your entire family kills themselves. And like, I love how you can see him start to panic because he still needs someone in his bloodline to crown him. Like, he can't put the crown on his own head. And so like, as his siblings just start to die one by one, he starts to panic almost. And then only Cardin is left and he's, you know, AWOL.
Drunk in a corner.
Like, it was such a great scene because it was like tragic and bloody and brutal, but it also had this like absurdity to it that kind of made it funny. Yes. And it was perfect.
Agreed. It was kind of hilarious. And I still, like, I'm curious because Jude talks a lot about how Maddox is like such a strategy guy and he always has like plan B and C and D and like all these contingencies and stuff. And I know at least at some point he wanted to crown Oak and be regent. That makes sense mm-hmm. to me. But I'm curious how much of that original plan went according to Maddox's plan versus didn't. Like, was Cardin was he thinking Oak would get crowned then, or did he adopt his plan to want Oak to be crowned when there was, like, this gap and time to find Cardin and make it happen? Or did he... Like, I'm kind of curious how...
What his plan was. And, yeah, I think that...
Yeah.
He backed Belkin because he thought Belkin would be easier to control or easier to dispose of. And so that's why, like, when Jude brings him Cardin, or brings Cardin back to Bellican, he's at first kind of pissed off, but then he's like, oh yeah, you should definitely crown Cardin because he's even easier to control. Like, he just wants whichever prince is going to yield to him the fastest to be on the throne. So I don't think he cares. And then I think his plan was to kill whichever one was crowned and then crown Oak.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I didn't know if he killed, if he turned on Dane because Dane threatened, I mean, thinking that if Dane ever found out about Oak, that he would kill Oak. Like, if it was at all partially loyal love for his son-ish person who...
I think that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And especially knowing that he tried to kill Oak.
I hope we see more of him. I am really excited to see that relationship, Jude and Madoc, when Madoc kind of realizes what she's done. And I feel like there's going to be this kind of, you've betrayed me, but also sort of a measure of respect for her, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, because at the end, we have that moment where Jude challenges him to a sword fight, right?
Yeah.
She's
after
like...
after she's poisoned him.
I know, but we don't know that at the time.
Yeah, I know.
She's like, you need to promise me that once Oak comes of age, you will step down from the throne. And he can't promise her that. And so she, like, takes the sword and, like, challenges him. And it's such a great moment where she's like, you've taught me everything I know. And, like, let's see if I can beat you now. And, of course, she does because she poisoned him. But that's beside the point.
But she also took a sword to her sister over a boy who isn't worth it.
Oh, I don't blame her for that.
I just got so nervous when she almost actually sliced her in half. And then I also want to see how that relationship plays out because I want, especially the twinness of them.
Yeah.
I want them to reach a good place again. I want her sister to choose her over the fairy world.
I agree. I do too. But I think it's going to take a lot of work on both sides.
I actually think that's one character who, well, a lot of them I think have gained another dimension. I still feel like I don't know Taryn as well, and that there's still, like, even though her secret has been revealed, I still am hoping that we get, like, kind of more insight into her motivation in the next book or two.
I agree. She's a fascinating character.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also very curious to see what happens between Jude and Cardin now, because... she pulled a fast one on him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we think she's setting it up to have him crown Oak.
Right.
Because no one even knows that Oak is of the line. But in the last moment, to protect Oak, she has him crown Cardin. And because he swore allegiance to her or whatever, basically she can command him like the fairies can glamour other people, which is also an interesting power to have over someone after having it done to you. Like, I never thought that she'd want to be like that to other people.
Yeah, that's a curious question, right? Because she's so resistant to being glamored and, like, not having control over herself, and she's horrified by it. And now she is controlling Cardin, and he has to obey anything she says.
And he's so mad at her for it, rightfully so.
Yeah.
Because who wouldn't be mad about that? And he's only promised her that he'll obey for a year and a day. And again, he's, like, the king of cunningness and trickery, so she has to be really careful about what she says because he'll find a way around, or like just to do the letter of the law kind of thing. And she wants her brother to be gone for like 7 years or 8 years or something like that, so what is she gonna do for the other 6 years? / I'm sure the next book is gonna be within that year, but
right. And she can't just like whisk Oak away and raise him outside of the influence of Madoc and never return to Fairy. Like, I think she has to come back to Fairy and, you know, keep controlling Cardin and still work on making alliances. Like, she started trying to make alliances with some of the other, like, Fairy people to try and get them to back Oak.
Yep.
So I bet that's what the second book is about, her, like, trying to make alliances.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be her trying to, like, gather power so she's ready for her brother and, like, this weird dynamic with Cardin and all this other stuff going on. But I also remember when Bellican was like, do you want me to make you one of us or something like that? And she was like, oh, I didn't realize that that was even a possibility. I'm curious to see if that idea comes back around now that Cardin has the power of being king, if she'll try to negotiate something else with him or... like, I'm curious if she'll be human at the end of this trilogy.
That is a great question. Like, if she'll turn fairy or become immortal.
Yep.
I don't know. It's just, it's also just like, I don't understand. I guess I just don't understand the fascination with wanting to be in fairy and wanting to be immortal. Like, when this book ends and she's in Target with Vivi and Oak, and I'm just like, why wouldn't you just leave all these horrible people behind to their own fate and just, like, go live in the human world and shop at Target?
Hang out with your sister and, like, your brother.
What?
Yeah. You can make money out of leaves. That sounds great.
It's just, I mean, obviously there would be a story otherwise, but in my mind, I'm like, this is a very clear solution. Just leave them all to kill each other and die out and go live your life.
Yeah.
But I guess she can't, you know, she can't abandon Oak. You know, I think she really does care for him.
Well, and again, I think it goes back to this idea that, yes, while she is human and she was born there, she really grew up in this fairy world. Yeah. And as brave as she is in some ways, it would be really hard. Like, in the same way that it'd be really hard to leave the human world and go live in fairy, it's like the opposite for her. Mm-hmm. Which is also, again, this interesting dynamic, because she's basically doing to Oak, not entirely, but
she's kind of forcing
on Oak the same, like, hardship that she faced in life. And true, she didn't, like, murder his parents in front of him or anything like that. But
I wonder if he'll be super reluctant to leave the human world.
Yeah.
Like, it's her and Oak had the exact same experience, but just switched.
Reversed, yeah.
And not the exact, but, you know, close. Ugh, okay. I can't wait to keep reading it.
I know, me too. I'm so excited.
Did you do any research this week?
I did a little bit.
Okay.
So, I have this article open called, Do You Have Fairy Blood? So, I was kind of looking into this idea. I mean, we've talked a little bit about fairies and humans and their interaction and what humans have seen fairies. And even we talked about changelings, like, I don't know, 2 seasons ago or something, where the fairies switch out one of their babies for a human baby. And, like, in theory, there's a lot of ways that someone could have fairy blood in their bloodline, given that fairies mate with humans and whatnot. So I was reading about some of the signs that you might be part fairy.
Ooh, let's hear it. I know I don't have any, because I just did a 23andMe DNA test, and sadly no fairy came up.
Well, this is also interesting. So I read that if the father is the human and the mother is the fairy, the child will be more fairy than human and likely grow up to eventually live in the fairy world. But if the father is a fairy and the mother is a human, the child will appear human and likely grow up living as a regular human, but might possess magical abilities and have tendencies that are passed down from the father's bloodline.
I think I would rather have that.
Yeah. Well, and that's what Vivi is, right? And you know how she's mostly human-looking as far as, like, some of the different aspects that people have? So I just thought that was interesting.
Except for her fur ears.
So usually the fairies that can get away with living with humans, like we just said, look more like humans. But they might have appearances that are a bit more magical-looking than ordinary men and women.
Hmm.
And another thing is they tend to live longer than ordinary people. So because they're still human, they might not live, like, infinitely, like most of the fairies are, like, for centuries, but they tend to be more resistant to illness and live longer in general. So kind of remember how you asked me that question once, like, when would you question if you were immortal?
Yeah, what age would you have to be to wonder if you were immortal? What did you say, like 123?
I mean, I said something like, I feel like it'd be more... Like, especially with all the health problems I've already had, like, if I've avoided enough, like, near-death experiences, I think I'd start to question it, or, like, recovered from, like, weird illnesses and stuff. I don't know. So, also, fairy people are startlingly beautiful. That's hard for me to say. Extremely beautiful. Like, you know, they look otherworldly. They have really delicate features, and they're really graceful. And you'll tend to be captivated by their gaze if you look into their eyes. Another physical sign you can look for to determine if you or someone you know is a fairy person is a low body temperature.
Oh, so they run cold.
Yeah, so it's not like freezing cold, but their skin will tend to be cooler even on hot days. I don't know why that is.
I'm thinking of Giselle right now. I feel like Giselle probably has fairy blood.
And they also said strange sleeping habits. So some part fairy humans tend to sleep all of the time, because they're more comfortable living in their dreams than in reality based on their fairiness, I guess.
Mm.
But others will only sleep for a few hours a night and then be, like, active and energetic at night, because as we read in this book, fairies tend to be awake at night.
Yep.
They are extremely sensitive to electromagnetic fields and tend to experience skin irritation, burning sensations, headaches, and other aches whenever they're in close range to one.
Whoa, okay.
And also, as we know, like, iron is bad for fairies, so...
Oh, right.
Partial fairies might be also sensitive to iron and iron alloys more than the average human as well.
Okay. And what about salt?
I didn't see anything about salt.
Okay. I feel like they'd be really good dancers, too.
Yeah, so they tend to be playful and lighthearted, and music is a big part of their lives where they enjoy singing and dancing, whether it's at parties or on their own. Hmm. And they tend to have a sharp sense of humor because, and like, be attracted to fun and games and, like, quick laughing and wit and charm and things like that. So they may laugh at inopportune times, in fact.
That's me. Maybe I do some fairy blood.
Despite having plenty of friends, a fairy person will often feel they don't fit completely into their lives.
Hmm.
The fairy blood, even if they're aware of it, will make them long for elsewhere. And they may...
Oh, so they're like never satisfied.
They may constantly long for travel or career changes to find themselves. So I might also be part fairy.
This is maybe you, yeah.
Yeah, and they just might have like other skills in terms of like healing or... like we said, the musical arts, they may be able to like draw animals to them. So again, we've talked about there's like so many different kinds of fairies and whatnot that,
mm-hmm.
that it's not like these three, it's not like you can just like do a blood test and be like, oh, I'm fairy blood. But
right.
If you have any of these things, you may be partially fairy, who knows? But so in general, I was looking at, cause I was thinking about Oak going to the human world. So then I was like, what other fairies are like part of the human world all the time? And I was thinking about the tooth fairy.
Oh, right.
And then I was like, where did that even come from? And then I was trying to remember because I feel like we've talked about it before, but I couldn't really remember anything about it.
I think we did. I think we talked about it during The Daughter of Smoke and Bone. Something with teeth.
Yeah. Maybe? Okay, so.
But I don't remember, obviously.
So I did a little bit of a recap. So I didn't know that back in the Middle Ages, Europeans believed that you could be cursed from your teeth, which is why it was so important to get rid of baby teeth.
Oh, I didn't
so
know that.
They would like swallow them or bury them or burn them. Or this is also interesting. I read a lot of things about rats. So sometimes they'd leave them out for rats to eat.
Ew.
And part of that is because rats, I guess, have strong teeth and like regenerate or like have a lot of teeth or something about rats and being able to develop teeth well, so they thought that if you fed your tooth to a rat, ew, that you would have healthy teeth in turn.
Okay, so that's why they would get rid of your teeth.
So then this kind of relates to in 18th century France, there was this fairy tale. It was called La Bonne Petite Souris, and it was like a children's story or whatever, and it was about a fairy that changes into a mouse to help a queen defeat an evil king, and the mouse hides under the king's pillow and defeats him by knocking out his teeth.
Oh.
So this is kind of some more of the tooth fairy myth coming.
Somewhat related, yeah.
Yeah. And then in Scandinavia, like the Vikings would pay children for a lost tooth, and the teeth were worn as necklaces for like good luck, charm in battle.
Oh, like a talisman?
So that idea of like exchanging a tooth for money started there.
Oh, that's fascinating.
But then the tooth fairy that we know today didn't really develop until the 1900s. But there's a bunch of different cultures that talk about different rites of passage related to losing your teeth and stuff. And again, a lot of them have to do with rats, I guess. And I thought it was interesting that the like mouse was also part of this like fairy rat, mouse, teeth, money. Like all these things are kind of like interwoven. But
too bad we lost the mouse aspect of the tooth fairy.
I don't know. I think that would creep me out as a kid to be like a mouse is crawling.
Yeah, if the tooth fairy was a mouse, it would come and eat your teeth.
And I'd be like afraid I'd like grow mouse teeth again.
Yeah, like maybe let's not do that to our kids.
So yeah, that was kind of my random research.
That's awesome. I love that. I love origin stories.
What about you? What'd you research?
So I was still fixated on Holly Black getting her ears modified to look like elf ears. And
okay.
There's also a moment in this book where, or in this half, when Vivi and Heather are like lying in bed and Heather says something to Vivi along the lines of like, wow, your ear mods are really well done.
Yeah, isn't that when she thought she was gonna ask her about her ears, but instead she just was like, great job. Who did this? Like, who's your, yeah.
So I researched extreme body modifications.
Okay. Is this going to be really cool or am I going to be like disturbed? Both?
Disturbed.
Okay. Okay, I'm preparing myself.
So I sent you the link.
Okay, I'm opening it.
Over text. Okay. Because it helps when you look at these with me because they are unreal. Like, I can't even imagine the effort that goes into changing your body this much.
Oh my goodness. I can't imagine what sparks someone to want to do something like in some ways the ear thing isn't like crazy to me, but this first picture I'm looking at, I can't imagine being like, this seems like a good idea.
The red skull?
Yeah.
Yeah, so this guy, Henry Damon, decided to make himself look like the Captain America villain, Red Skull. So he had his nose removed,
mm-hmm.
and he tattooed his face red, and he definitely has some kind of, like, subdermal implants, where, like, you put an object under your skin, and it pushes up through your skin so you can see the outline of the objects, and it, like, makes your face have shapes that it shouldn't have naturally.
Again, I just have so many questions about why.
I have no idea. Why would you go out of your way to make yourself look so scary? He tattooed his eyes black. Look at that.
It seems so, like, painful, extreme. And then, like, in some ways, almost it would make more sense if you, like, created this character. But, like, being the villain in a Captain America, like, why?
It's not even original.
Yeah.
And I just don't know why you would want to put so much effort into making yourself look so scary to other people.
And my other question, yeah, is like, what about the people in your life? What do they think? Like, are they like, this is so cool? Or are they like, what did you do, bro?
The nose. Oh. Okay, so that's the first one. I don't even want to talk about the second one.
No, let's skip that.
Okay, so this woman named Cindy Moore decided that she wanted a change in her life. And so she decided to modify her body to look like a doll. So she spent around $12,000 on cosmetic procedures.
Oh my
goodness. She's had breast augmentations, hair extensions, lip fillers, tummy tuck. She just wants to do everything she can to make herself look like a human doll.
Jeez Louise.
And it kind of reminds me, have you ever seen pictures of that woman? She's from Eastern Europe, I think, but she is called the human Barbie doll.
I have, yes.
Yeah. So she claims that she has not had any plastic surgery to achieve that look. It's all done through makeup.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Well, which that is very interesting.
That I can, respect is maybe the wrong word, but like, that's actually like very artistic and creative to do it with makeup. And if you change your mind one day, you wash your face and do something else. Doing like investing $12,000, and it said she was a single mom, right? Like, I just like, are there not better ways to spend your money? Or like, I think of all the things I would do if I just had $12,000 lying around, and or even if I had like $2 million lying around, I don't think any of these things would make the list.
I still wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Well, the next one would definitely not make the list.
Oh, wow.
So Ted Richards from England decided that he really loved his pet parrots so much that he decided to look like one. So he had a 6-hour procedure to have his ears removed.
Oh my goodness.
And he got...
I was just looking at the picture. I thought you were talking... He also has like facial tattoos, which are also extreme, but he had his ears removed?
Yeah, he had his ears... He had his ears surgically removed to look like a parrot. And if you look at the facial tattoos, like, he has a beak, he has feathers, he has, like, he did everything he could to make himself look like a parrot.
Is that, like, what does that do for you? Like, how does that affect your hearing?
I don't know. Like, what
affects it? Same with the nose thing. Like, what are the, I feel like our organs developed a certain way for certain reasons.
Could you imagine, like, getting a cold and having that? No, like not having a nose.
I already can't hear well either. This would just be bad. And how would I do the podcast if I couldn't put headphones in? Or I don't know. But this is this one's just funny to me. I have friends who are really into birds, and I just want to like send them this picture and be like, if you want to feel more like a family, or I don't know, they have got like multiple pet birds.
So skip the next picture because it's gonna freak you out.
Okay.
And
this next one might too.
Oh, yeah. Well, the one that you skipped was don't look at the picture, but he advertises himself as the creature. He adds a new tattoo every single day.
What?
And he says, without feeling the needle, I feel like I'm losing my purpose in life.
I think he needs to talk to somebody about that.
Yeah. So I think he holds the record for the most human. He's the most tattooed and pierced individual in the entire world.
Wow.
He said he's looking for an apartment right now.
That's the other thing I wonder about. How do these people, like, get jobs?
I don't know.
Like, I feel like some jobs you're not supposed to even have, like, facial piercings or, like, visible tattoos or, like, dye your hair an unnatural color.
Which is so
and
unfair.
Stuff. And it's like, how do you, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, this guy.
I mean, and those are extreme, I think. But still, like, I can't imagine being in a professional workplace with someone coming in with a parrot face.
That would be tricky. He said that his 6-year-old daughter is terrified of him, which I think is just so sad.
That is so sad.
Yeah. Okay, so this next one, this guy decided to make himself look like a platypus.
Again, why? Why, people? Why? I just don't understand. I need some background.
But here's the thing. He said he spent 7 years stretching out his lips to resemble a platypus. But he said his spirit animal is a bird. So it's like not even.
Well, then he should be a parrot guy.
I know.
That's like, I think I told you about this. My friend who got like a tiger tattooed on his chest. Mm. And it like is very intricate. He had to go to like multiple sessions. He passed out in two of them. Mm. And he's like a Brazilian street fighter. He's like this really tough guy. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, what's the tiger mean to you? And he's like, I thought it looked cool.
Oh, no.
And, like, that's fine, but I'm kind of like, why would you do all that unless it, like, means something? And, again, if it's not even your spirit animal, why a platypus?
Yeah.
And you said he stretched out his lips? Yeah. So does that mean it wasn't, like, a surgical thing? It was, like, him just, like...
I think he used, like, gauges. Like, you do an ear gauge.
Mm-hmm.
And he spent 7 years doing it. And, like, the plug that is in his mouth, or in his lip, it is the size of a big apple. Like, that's how big it is.
Oh, my goodness.
It must be so painful. How do you eat? It's his lower lip.
I feel like I can't look at these pictures, so you just keep talking.
Okay.
And tell me if I really need to look
Don't look at any of them anymore. The first one were, like, fine, but these next ones are just, like, they're extreme. So the next one is this man named Joe Migler. He has flesh tunnels, he calls them, all over his face. The largest one is over an inch.
Oh, my goodness. Oh,
it's like 1¼ inch. And there's a picture of him with a piece of string going through his flesh tunnels. And it's a hole in one cheek that goes through the other cheek. So he has basically a tunnel through his cheeks. And he has a string pulled through them.
So, okay. This is not my thing at all because I don't do needles anyways. So tattoos and piercings are like really outside my comfort zone. But... it kind of reminds me, it's not obviously the same as fairy, but kind of again to this idea of like the fairies and they each have like some, they're like mostly human, but have like something different about the way they look. And I get that these are all, but it's just kind of shouldn't be like, they look like any other human except they have tunnels in their cheeks.
Right.
Or like they look like any human except they don't have ears.
So true.
Or like.
Except they have a tail. We did get to see Cardin's tail.
Yeah.
Ew.
True. Yeah.
Okay. Oof. Okay, this is the most pierced woman in the world, Elaine Davidson. She has 6,925 piercings. Some of them weigh up to 7 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't imagine carrying
I would have trouble remembering to keep them all clean, too, or whatever. Like,
or just even just the weight.
Not getting any piercings infected. And yeah, the weight.
Like, it must add 15 pounds to her, the amount of jewelry she has in her face. It's incredible.
And have you ever lost an earring backing before?
Yeah.
I wonder how much worse it would be if you had a lot of piercings or if it would be like, oh, I've got like 17 other ones, so it's fine.
She probably doesn't even notice. I bet she loses them all the time. Oh, gosh. So there's more eyeball tattoos. This one guy decided to make himself look like a lizard, so he got the forked tongue. Have you ever seen those? Don't.
Ooh.
It's where you split your tongue in the middle and have a forked tongue like a serpent.
That sounds so painful.
I know.
I feel like your tongue is very sensitive.
Yes. It? And he sharpened his teeth also, too. So he has a full body of green scale tattoos, a split tongue, subdermal implants, and sharpens teeth.
Again, I'm just thinking about all the money people have spent to do these things.
And, like, how do you undo it? Like, once you file down your teeth to little sharp points, like, you can't... How do you undo it? You know, you can't.
Well, and again, this has to be pretty expensive, but I guess I don't know what these people do or how they have money, but it's not like you see, like, billionaires that you see in the news with, like, tattoos and piercings everywhere or whatever. Like, it. Part of me feels like these gotta be, mm-hmm. like, average Joe guys down the street who just, like, decide to do this.
I can't look at any more of them. They're just too crazy.
Okay, good. No, I'm glad. Let's cut that
off.
Oh,
there. Wait, okay. There is one. Okay, this one's not bad. This is
okay.
The human Ken. So his name's Justin Jedlicka, and he had himself modified to look like a human Ken doll. He spent $100,000 on five nose surgeries, a cranial brow bone shape, and augmentations to his cheeks, lips, buttocks, and chin. He doesn't even look like Ken. That's the thing. I mean, he looks...
I think twice about getting my nails done and, like, the commitment of that, and that comes off after a few weeks.
I don't think he looks like a Ken doll. I think he looks like a doll, but not Ken.
I think that would be the worst. What if you spent all that money and you didn't even look the way you wanted to look at the end?
That'd be terrible.
Also, a little, like, six-year-old once told me I look like Barbie, so aww. It's really not that hard, people.
Anyone can be Barbie. Send me.
Anyone can be Barbie.
Yeah, so there's just a lot of different body modifications in the world.
Well, to each their own. You do you.
Yes.
But don't make me get... Don't take your needles near me, please. Thank you.
Agreed.
Would you get a piercing or tattoo next? Like, if you had to pick either tattoo or piercing, what would you do?
A piercing, because that's not permanent. I actually got my a cartilage piercing, like, 2 years ago with my cousin on a trip that we took together. And I regretted it because it was so painful and I could never sleep and it was just so irritating. And they don't heal for like a year. And so I was like,
oh, man.
Just irritated by it. And then I waited like 8 months and I thought, I was like, well, it's 8 months. It's probably fine. And I went to sleep and when I woke up, it was already healed. So... Luckily, I don't have that piercing anymore because I didn't even want it. But
oh wow,
I was amazed. Like, it closed up in like 7 hours.
Wow.
What about you?
So again, these people with all these piercings would have, I don't know, I like both freak me out so much. Part of me would almost just want to get a tattoo because I haven't done it. And this like part of me that's, you know, like, well, I'll do anything mm-hmm. once kind of thing. But there's nothing I actually want a tattoo of.
Right.
I want something meaningful and like there's nothing like that for me. But like... Part of me is like, why would I get a piercing just to get a piercing? But to your point, it would close up. But I don't know. I think if I was like forced to, I'd just be like, okay, I'm going to do a tattoo.
Have you ever done momentary tattoos?
Like I've done temporary tattoos. Is that what you're talking about?
No. I know we've done temporary tattoos. there's this thing called momentary ink. I actually did one this summer.
No.
It's just a fake tattoo, but they're designed to not look like fake tattoos, essentially. And it lasts for, like, 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I did one of a little fox on my bicep.
I kind of feel like you should commit to that for, like, a few months at least before you get a tattoo. Like, if you put in the work and every single day or every couple weeks it's worth it to, like, reapply the tattoo, then you should be allowed to get a tattoo.
I think that's what it's designed for. It's, like, so people can test out whether or not they actually want one.
I actually kind of feel like I remember you doing this now that you're talking about it.
Mm-hmm. I got, like, a little outline of a fox.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. I've done, like, henna at the beach before. Like, at the beach, you know, they always have, like, people going around, like, doing stuff. I've done, like...
Oh, yeah. Like, henna airbrush tattoos.
The airbrush tattoos. And we used to do... I think we've talked about this before. Like, where we'd put stickers on our skin and then tan. So
oh,
it was, like,
yeah.
Like a, yeah.
I used to do that. I feel like that was such a 90s thing to do.
It was. For sure.
Okay. Well, should we... Keep reading this series? Start the second book?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah, the second one is called The Wicked King, right?
Yes.
Or actually, I don't know which one's second and which one's
no,
first.
No, you're right. Okay. The Wicked King. And we're going to read up to chapter 17.
17? Okay.
Do you want to read the back?
Sure.
This lovely book. It's short. It's a shorty.
I know it is. Okay. You must be strong enough to strike and strike and strike again without tiring. The first lesson is to make yourself that strong. Jude has bound the wicked king, Cardan, to her and made herself the power behind the throne. Navigating the constantly shifting political alliances of Faerie would be difficult enough if Cardan were biddable. but he does everything in his power to humiliate and undermine her, even as his fascination with her remains undiminished. When it becomes all too clear that someone close to Jude means to betray her, threatening her life and the lives of everyone she loves, Jude must uncover the traitor and fight her own complicated feelings for Carden to maintain control as a mortal in a fairy world. Okay.
Oh my goodness, I'm so excited.
Sounds like more power struggles and interesting relationships.
Who's the traitor?
I don't know.
Oh, she's already been betrayed so many times.
I was going to say, I kind of feel like everyone already has, so who do we even trust enough to not think they would betray her?
Well, Taryn and Locke have already done their damage, so they're out.
I mean,
her father.
Are we going to, do you think Maddox is going to, yeah, come back into?
I'm sure he will.
Onto our side and then, or maybe one of the other spies, like,
Ghost or Roach or Bomb.
Oh, wait, also, at the end of My Cruel Prince, there was, like, read the next chapter of the next book. And I didn't read that because I knew I shouldn't. But then, after that, I had a short story, A Visit to the Impossible Lands, a special short story. And I still haven't read it yet, but if you have it...
I'll try to find it and read it
for next week.
Okay.
Yeah.
The spies of the House of Court of Shadows or whatever, their names remind me of the names of the Howlers in Red Rising.
That's actually very good.
They're like Pebble and Dog Shit, and I don't know. They all have such weird names.
Well, she just finally got her nickname at the very end, too. She's now Queen.
Yeah. Love that.
I like how she was like, they're probably going to call me Liar.
That would be accurate as well.
Yes. And I do love these word games and the lies and the tricks and the truths and the whatever. Like when Carden was trying to, like, lying about being a messenger for, or what, I forget exactly what the lie was, when they were trying to get through that guard, and he technically said all truths, but it was very misleading.
Yes.
And he was drunk, and she's kind of like, well, if he can do that, I need to be really careful.
They're good with their wordplay. Okay, well, if you guys want to get in touch with us and let us know if you have any fairy blood or if you have any really cool body modifications, you can write to us at mnktalkya@gmail.com.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram at MNKTalkYA. And would you like some jokes?
Yes. I always forget.
I have a fairy joke.
Oh, great.
What did the tooth fairy use to fix her wand?
I don't know.
Toothpaste.
Oh, that's good.
These are like for the little kids, but I still found them funny. And I half the ones on this list, I was like, yep, my dad told me that. What do you call a fairy that doesn't take a bath?
Dirty. I don't know.
Stinkerbell.
That's cute. Oh, we didn't talk about our favorite scene.
Oh.
Or the scene we most want to turn into a movie.
And I mean, I feel like if I was watching a movie, although I don't know if I would actually see it, but it would have to be the coronation when everyone's killing each other. And like, it's like, what's going on?
Agreed.
But I honestly feel like what I would enjoy seeing would be all this, like the costumes and the, like, just like the people and what they're wearing and like the, maybe when she's at the top of the tower, or no, maybe Locke's party, or I don't know.
Honestly, I was going to say the same thing. Like, don't think me shallow, but I just want to see the dresses.
Yeah.
Like, I know. Oriana's has like petals and it looks like a flower. And she has that one that's like embroidered with, I don't even remember what it was. It looks like stars and it's like white at the top and then really light purple, blue, and then gets darker. It's like this ombre. Ugh.
Well, and I feel like between that and then, like, I'm imagining, like, the fairy music, which is so, like, mesmerizing, and people, like, dancing around and, like, wine of all these different colors, like, splashing around and, like, even the food. Like, there's all these, like, hummingbird hearts or, like, random stuff like that, I feel like, that they were eating, and just, like, seeing one of these giant parties with everyone dressed up and, like, this magic kind of almost frenzied joy sort of thing would be just a fun scene to watch.
I absolutely agree.
Cool. Okay, anything else?
No, I think we're good.
Bye, bookworms.
Go get a library card.
M&K Talk YA is produced and edited by Marissa Snyder and Katie Bradford. Original music composition by Timothy Milkey. Logo design by Marissa Snyder. For updates and extras, visit mnktalkya.com or follow us on Instagram and Facebook. And if you haven't already, please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. We would like to thank James Tobias, Chad Snyder, Meredith Kelfie, and Michael Howard for all of their support. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.